Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam
Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Chapter entitled Questions by the Sages, Text Number 7.
Yani Veda Vidam Shrestho.
Yani Veda Vidam Shrestho.
Bhagavan Badarayanaha.
Bhagavan Badarayanaha.
Anyecha Munaya Sutta.
Anyecha Munaya Sutta.
Paravara Vido Vidu.
Paravara Vido Vidu.
Yani.
Yani.
All that.
All that.
Veda Vidam.
Veda Vidam.
Scholars of the Vedas.
Scholars of the Vedas.
Shrestha.
Shrestha.
Senior most.
Bhagavan.
Incarnation of Godhead.
Incarnation of Godhead.
Badarayana.
Badarayana.
Vyasadev.
Vyasadev.
Anye.
Anye.
Others.
Others.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Munaya.
Munaya.
The sages.
The sages.
Sutta.
Sutta.
Or Sutta Goswami.
Sutta Goswami.
Paravara Vida.
Paravara Vida.
Amongst the learned scholars.
Amongst the learned scholars.
One who is conversant with physical and metaphysical knowledge.
One who is conversant with physical and metaphysical knowledge.
Vidu.
Vidu.
One who knows.
One who knows.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Suta Goswami, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Godhead. And you also know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. Translation responsibly. Being the eldest learned Vedantist.
Being the eldest learned Vedantist.
O Suta Goswami.
O Suta Goswami.
You are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva.
You are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva.
Who is the incarnation of Godhead.
Who is the incarnation of Godhead.
And you also know other sages.
You also know other sages.
Who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentation on the Brahma Sutra or the Badarayani Vedanta Sutras. It is called natural because Vyasadeva is author of both the Vedanta Sutras and Srimad Bhagavatam, or the essence of all Vedic literatures. Besides Vyasadeva, there are many other sages who are the authors of six different philosophical systems, namely Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali, Jaimini, and Ashtavakra. Theism is explained completely in the Vedanta Sutra, whereas in other systems of philosophical speculations, practically no mention is given to the ultimate cause of all causes. One can sit on the Vyasasan only after being conversant in all systems of philosophy, so that one can present fully the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems. Srila Suta Goswami was the proper teacher, and therefore the sages at Naimisharanya elevated him to the Vyasasan. Srila Vyasadeva is designated herein as the personality of Godhead because he is the authorized, empowered incarnation. Just give me some paper towel. Just go into the paraphernalia room. Just get some paper towel or tissue. Oh, no tissues.
Om Gyan Timadam Dasya Ginamjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swavadantikam Vansha Kaupata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Pievacha Matitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we see, here we are hearing about the qualifications of the speaker of the Bhagavatam. If one is to speak on the Bhagavatam, one must be highly qualified. So it is said here that Suta Goswami has fully studied the philosophy of Vyasadeva, which culminates in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he has fully understood all other philosophical paths of knowledge. There are six great philosophers which are mentioned here. So one must understand the philosophy of these six great philosophers. And one must fully understand Srila Vyasadeva's own philosophy. Actually, it is mentioned that one should read the Vedas three times and fully assimilate it. Then you can speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So at this point in time, I'd like to step off the Vyasasana because I have no qualification to speak the Bhagavatam according to the tradition, actually. So, in Kali Yuga, we have to be practical. We have to adopt the standards according to time, place, and circumstance. So what is the qualification for one to sit on the Vyasasana in Kali Yuga and give the Bhagavatam class? So, at least, Srila Prabhupada says, the minimum requirement is that one must repeat what one has heard from his guru. That is the minimal qualification. Whatever your guru has taught you, then you can repeat that. Srila Prabhupada has given voluminous books, he has given conversations, he has given letters. There is so much literature, so many lectures by Prabhupada, so much vani, or so much instruction from Prabhupada, and as his followers, as his grand disciples, then we must study them very deeply. Simultaneously, we must also study, or we must hear from Srila Prabhupada through our own spiritual master. And this is how we will understand the essence of the Vedas. It is not that you can understand the entire Vedic literature. None of us have even read all of the Vedas. So many Vedas are there, so many Puranas are there, so many Upanishads. We haven't even read them. I've never seen them, I've never read them. I wouldn't even know the names of most of them. So then what qualification do we have to sit on the Vyasasana and speak? Our qualification is that if we do not change anything that we have heard from our spiritual master in disciplic succession, then Prabhupada said that gives you qualification or authority to speak. Prabhupada said, present the philosophy in your own words. So you ascertain, or you take the instructions of your guru that have been received, he has received from Srila Prabhupada through disciplic succession, and then you present that to the best of your ability, Prabhupada said, in your own words. So as long as we do not deviate from the philosophy, but you can present it in your own words, you can discuss it and explain it according to your own personal level of realization.
And this is the minimal qualification to sit on the Vyasasan. Now, generally, the Bhagavatam class is given by those who are twice born, which means those who have received second initiation, generally, although some of the devotees who are giving classes are not second initiated at this point in time. They may only be first initiated. But generally, it is said that we should only give class if we are second initiated. Now, what was Prabhupada's standard for someone who is second initiated? Prabhupada said that we must have our Bhakti Shastri degree. If you have your second initiation, if you are what we call a Brahmana in ISKCON, then Prabhupada's instruction is you should have your Bhakti Shastri degree. Because then we can understand that at least you have a minimal understanding of the philosophy. You've studied the Bhagavad Gita, the Ishopanishad, the Nectar of Instruction, and the Nectar of Devotion thoroughly, and you've passed your examinations. And then you may have at least a minimal understanding. So that was Prabhupada's desire, and that needs to be implemented within ISKCON in the future. That as much as possible, when devotees take second initiation, they should have Bhakti Shastri qualification. So they are philosophically fixed up. So then they can present the philosophy authoritatively, without speculation. You can describe it in your own words, but there must be a basic understanding. So here we're hearing, through these section of verses, from here, from about verse 5 till about verse 10 or so, we're hearing about the qualification of one to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. One must have very high qualification. You read these verses, and then it is only by the instruction of the spiritual master and by Srila Prabhupada's instruction that we sit on the Vyasasan. Because if you read those verses, we don't have qualification to speak. I don't have qualification to speak on the Bhagavatam. Because when I read these verses, it's a very high standard of qualification, which is practically for a previous yuga. Practically, it's not really the standard even for Kali Yuga. We can't virtually come to that standard, most of us. So, we follow Srila Prabhupada's instruction. Prabhupada instructed that you repeat whatever you have learnt. Saraswati, who was Malati, Mother Malati's daughter, you see in the videos of Prabhupada when they first went to India, early 70s, like that. And Saraswati, she's only 3 or 4 years old. She's just a little child, about this big. And you see quite often she's with Prabhupada. Sometimes Prabhupada's walking and holding her hand, and he's playing with her, having different games. There's also, I think it actually might be on that famous picture that we have Prabhupada here. If you see the video, then Prabhupada's a Bhaktivedanta Mana on the lawn, and Saraswati comes down. She's just like a little girl. She's only about 2 years old, 3 years old. And she goes to grab something off Prabhupada. Prabhupada holds something out. She goes to take it, and Prabhupada holds onto it. She's trying to take it, and Prabhupada's holding it, playing with her. Prabhupada was very fatherly. He was like a grandfather. Prabhupada actually said that spiritual master is a formality. Actually, it is spiritual father. And also grandfather. And Srila Prabhupada actually said to his disciples that the grandfather or the grand spiritual master is more merciful than the spiritual master. Not more merciful, but more lenient. Just like the grandfather is softer to the child than the parents. Parents are strict, but the grandparents are not strict. So Prabhupada said to his disciples that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would be very soft on them, very merciful on them. And similarly, because we are grand disciples of Prabhupada, we're in a very fortunate position, because Prabhupada is very soft on us, generally. Sometimes he is very heavy on us too, when he needs to be, like that. So Prabhupada's mood was one of being like a father, and Prabhupada was very loving, and he was also sometimes very playful with his disciples, and like with Saraswati, he would hold on to the... One time, Prabhupada was driving in the car, I think from Kolkata to Mayapur, and Prabhupada was sitting in the car,
And Tamal Krishnamurti is known. Is there or there? I think Prabhupada and Tamal Krishnamurti were sitting in the back seat, and Upendra Prabhu was sitting in the front seat. And Upendra Prabhu was chanting his japa, and he was kind of like nodding off. So then when he went forward one time, Prabhupada grabbed his seeker. So then he went, went to go forward, and Prabhupada had hold of his seeker. So he fell forward. And he turned around, because, when you're a little bit in Tamagun, you get a bit angry. So he turned around, he thought it was Tamal Krishnamurti. So he turned around and looked at Tamal Krishnamurti, was like, like this. And Prabhupada just started laughing. He didn't even know it was Prabhupada who did it. Like that. So Prabhupada was very playful, very loving to his followers. So Saraswati, she was only 3 or 4, and she used to go up to people when they first got to India, and they were preaching, they were going around preaching. Prabhupada was taking his disciples around preaching, and she would go up to people and she would say, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And the Indian people would go, "Who is Krishna?" Like that. And she'd say, "He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Like that. And then Prabhupada said, "She is perfect. She has attained perfection in her realization, in her preaching. Because according to her ability and her knowledge and her ability to present the philosophy, she was perfectly presenting the philosophy. If that's all you know, then you repeat." Prabhupada said, "Just repeat what you have known. Whatever you know, just repeat that. Just repeat what you have learned from your spiritual master." So then that is perfection. And that is the qualification to give Srimad Bhagavatam class. We do not deviate from what we have heard from the spiritual master. Otherwise, there is not qualification according to this level of qualification. So such high standards are given here. And why are these high standards given? Right. These high standards are given because it breeds within us humility, or it makes us understand we are not qualified. That's why the Bhagavatam speaks on such a high level. The Bhagavatam is speaking here, and Bhagavatam is saying you must be free from all vice, you must be free from sex desire, you must be free from duality, you must be conversant in all 6 systems of philosophy and fully understand the Vedanta, like that. So then we become humble, which is one of the qualifications to give the Bhagavatam class. Because if you're proud, then there's no life or juice, or the benefit is limited. When you speak to the devotees who are listening, they don't get so much benefit. If you're proud, if you're just standing on the Vyasasan and you're quoting so many shlokas, I know so many shlokas. I know the whole Bhagavad Gita. I've memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita. Even there are some devotees who have memorized the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Even to this day, if you go to India, people have memorized the whole Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, and then more on top of that. Right? But then, that is perfect, actually, because that is Uttama Adhikari. Uttama Adhikari must be fully conversant in the philosophy, and he has realizational humility. So that is actually the highest qualification. If someone has memorized the entire Bhagavatam and can speak the philosophy from a humble standpoint, that is the highest. That is the most qualified personality. But if we are simply proud, then all of our learning becomes insignificant. And whatever we speak, it becomes insignificant. It loses its potency. So there's a very famous story in Mahaprabhu's pastimes of Devananda Pandit. So Devananda Pandit was very learned. At the time when Mahaprabhu appeared, Navadvip was the seat of learning in all of India for the great scholars. They came from everywhere to learn in Navadvip. They were considered the topmost scholars, the Navadvip scholars. Back in those days, it was like there was great competition between the various places of scholarship. And Navadvip was said to have the highest scholars, the best scholars. That's why when Keshava Kashmiri, when he came to Navadvip, he rode on an elephant. He was a Digvijay. He conquered all the scholars everywhere, and then he came to Navadvip to conquer the scholars in Navadvip. Because then that was the last place.
And if he conquered all the scholars in Navadvipa, who were the most learned personalities, then he would be considered the most prestigious scholar and the most honoured scholar in all of India. So then he was heading there. He rode on an elephant into Navadvipa with all of his followers. And then when he entered into Navadvipa, the first night, they set up their camp next to the Ganga. And Nimai Pandit and his friends, they came to visit. Nimai was only a boy. He's not even a fully grown man yet, only like maybe 16, maybe, like that. So he came and he said, "Oh, Panditji, you're such a great learned person. I want to hear from you, your learning." And when he saw him, when Keshava Kashmiri saw him, so attracted to Gauranga, he was so attracted to his beauty, he said, "Please sit." Even though he was just a young person, he said, "Please sit." And he said, "I will instruct you," like that. And he said, "I want to hear, you're so learned, I want to hear your scholarship. I want to understand your learning. Please give me some understanding of the glories of Mother Ganga." So on the spot, he recited 100 verses in Sanskrit glorifying Mother Ganges. And everyone was just amazed. Everyone was amazed at his scholarship. And Nimai was just sitting there, just looking at him very sweetly. And at the end, Keshava Kashmiri said, "So, what do you think?" And Nimai said, "Your scholarship is amazing. I've never heard such a wonderful scholar." He said, "However, in the 64th shloka, there were 5 defects." And Keshava Kashmiri says, "Who is this boy?" 5 defects? Like, "Oh, and what are those defects?" And he said, "Well," he mentioned the 5 defects. And then Keshava Kashmiri was struck with one. He could not believe. Who is this boy? Memorized all 100 shlokas, picks out 5 defects in verse 64. And then when Keshava Kashmiri wanted to respond to him and wanted to answer him, he couldn't say anything. He just went. Mother Saraswati left his tongue. That's why when we begin the Bhagavatam, what do we say? What is the verse that we chant before we recite the Bhagavatam? Narayanam namaskritcha naram cheva narottamam devim Saraswatim vyasam. Right? Devi Saraswati Devi. We offer obeisances to the goddess of learning, Mother Saraswati, who is the wife of Lord Brahma. So we offer obeisances to Saraswati. There is also divine Saraswati, who is the consort of Narayan or Vishnu. She was the one who instructed Lord Brahma in the creation. She gave him Gopal Gayatri Mantra in the beginning of the creation. So we meditate on Saraswati. We offer obeisances to her before we recite the Bhagavatam. So Saraswati left his tongue. So then Keshava Kashmiri, he went away that night and he began to meditate and pray, and he said, "Saraswati, why did you leave me? Why have you humiliated me like this? I'm about to conquer Navadvipa. And I've just been defeated by a boy. I haven't even crossed the Ganga yet." My life is ruined. I've just ridden into Navadvipa on an elephant wearing a turban. And now I'm a fool. Why have you done this to me? So then she appears to him and she says, "Actually, you have to understand who just defeated you. The person who defeated you is my creator. I can't even speak before him. What can I say before him? This is Gauranga Mahaprabhu." So he got realization. Next day, then he came and he offered obeisance and said, "I surrender to you. What is the use of all of our learning if we don't understand who is God? What is the use of our learning if God's standing in front of us and we don't even know who that is? Our life is shrama eva hi kevalam. It's useless. Waste of existence. You don't even understand who God is. You read so many books and you don't even understand who God is. Useless." So Devananda Pandit, he was a very learned scholar. So he was in Navadvipa at that time, very learned, very well known. So he had memorized the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole Bhagavatam was in his mind. He could just recite the whole 18,000 verses. So every day he would give class in Koladvipa, and which is across the Ganges, the Navadvipa, where the Navadvipa town is. It's just behind there. It's called Koladvipa. So every day he would recite the Bhagavatam, and many people would come. But he was not a devotee, so he did not understand the Bhagavatam. Even though he knew the entire 18,000 verses, he didn't understand it. He didn't understand Krishna's tu, Bhagavan, Swayam. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So, Keshava Devananda Pandit, one time, Srivas Thakur, Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadhar, Srivas, Srivas Thakur, Narad Muni incarnated, one of the five members of the Panchatattva. He came past and he heard the Bhagavatam was being recited, so he was ecstatic. He thought, the Bhagavatam is being recited, let me go and hear the Bhagavatam. So he came in and he was sitting at the back, and then he was listening to the Bhagavatam and he was becoming ecstatic, and tears were coming from his eyes because he was hearing the Bhagavatam. It says in the Bhagavatam that if you chant the holy name, or you could say if you hear the Bhagavatam and tears do not come from your eyes, it said then your heart is steel framed. Because when your heart actually melts and becomes soft in devotion to Krishna, when you chant the holy name or you hear the Bhagavatam, tears will come to your eyes. But at this point in time, we have trouble staying awake. Don't worry about even tears coming. First you have to stay awake. First qualification for tears to come is to stay awake. Devotees, sometimes you're giving class and they go... very enjoyable when you're giving a Bhagavatam class or something. So it's floating off like that. So usually at that point I stop the class and I say Prabhu or Mataji, you know, I say please stay awake. So Srivas Thakur tears began to come from his eyes, and then he began to become ecstatic hearing the Bhagavatam, and he began to roll on the ground in ecstasy hearing the Bhagavatam like that. And then Devananda Pandit, he was giving class and someone's rolling around at the back of the class. So he was looking, and then he said, "Who is that? Who is that?" Like that. And he said, "Get him out of here. Who is this sentimentalist? Who is this? Get him out." So some people, they went and they took Srivas Thakur and said, "Hey, you're disturbing Devananda Pandit. Hey, out." Threw out Srivas Thakur from the Bhagavatam class. Right? So, later on, Mahaprabhu was doing Sankirtan. Lord Chaitanya was chanting and dancing. Sometimes described, but I think... No, he was walking, that's right. He was following. Maybe it was before... No, he must have been... He'd begun the Sankirtan movement by that stage. But he was walking with some followers. And they were walking towards where Devananda Pandit lives. And Devananda Pandit was coming down the road. And Mahaprabhu stopped on the road and saw Devananda Pandit coming and said, "I will not give him any mercy. I will not give him any mercy. He is offended, Srivas Thakur. No, he shall get no mercy." Like that. And then he turned and he walked the opposite direction, and all of Mahaprabhu's associates followed him. So something happened to Devananda Pandit. Something in his heart. He thought, something's not right here. I've offended Srivas Thakur. All my learning is useless. I've offended Gauranga. All my learning is useless. So then, later on, Mahaprabhu took sannyas and he went to Jagannath Puri. Then he sent his devotees to spread the Sankirtan movement. And one of his devotees, his name is Vakrashwara Pandit. Vakrashwara Pandit used to dance in Kirtan with Mahaprabhu, it said sometimes he would dance for 72 hours non-stop. How long is that? 3 days non-stop, dancing in kirtan, ecstatically. Lord Chaitanya said, if I had another wing like Devananda, if I had another wing like Vakrashwara, he said, I could fly. If I had another wing like him, I could fly. That's how beautiful his dancing was. When Mahaprabhu organized the civil disobedience movement and they went to the Chankazi, then he danced in one party, Nityananda Prabhu danced in one party, Haridas Thakur and Srivas Thakur danced in one party at Vaidho Acharya, and Vakrashwara Pandit was one of the lead dancers. He's very famous for his dancing. So Mahaprabhu sent him to away from Puri to go and preach, to spread Sankirtan. So he went to Navadvip and he began to preach in Navadvip, and one day he was doing kirtan and he was dancing in ecstasy, and all the crowd came to watch him. So he was dancing and chanting in ecstasy, and sometimes when he was dancing he would just smash to the ground, he would just fall to the ground. Sometimes it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when Lord Chaitanya would hit the ground, when he was dancing, sometimes he would just fall to the ground. It said he hit the ground so hard that it would seem that every bone in his body would break. He doesn't have any bones in his body. But it felt like that. When the devotees saw how hard he would hit the ground, the devotees would feel, oh, Mahaprabhu, he's hurt himself. So Vakrashwara Pandit, he was hitting the ground, he was rolling in the dust in ecstasy. And Devananda Pandit saw him, and the crowd were coming in very close. So Devananda Pandit, being very influential, he went around Vakrashwara Pandit, and with his stick he kept everyone back, so he would have room to dance, and everyone would stand back because Devananda Pandit was very influential. And then he would pick up Vakrashwara Pandit when he had fallen to the ground, and he would dust him off, he would wipe the dust from his body, and then he would stand up again and he would so then he began to associate, Devananda Pandit began to associate with Vakrashwara Pandit. And Vakrashwara Pandit taught him the Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual essence of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. To actually understand that devotion, Savai Pumsam Paro Dhammo Yato Bhaktir at Hoksaje Ahoituki Apatihata Yayatma Supersiddhi. He taught him the essence of the Bhagavatam. So then his heart changed, and he understood that he had offended Srivas Thakur. So when Gauranga himself, when Lord Chaitanya came to Navadvip later on, then Devananda Pandit, he approached Mahaprabhu and he begged forgiveness for his offences. So if you go to Koladvip, and if you go to the Devananda Gaudiya Mutt, there is a place there, and it is said that if you go there and you beg forgiveness from your Vaishnav aparad, from any offence that you have committed to any devotee, Lord Chaitanya will forgive it at that place. So whenever we go to Navadvip, to Mayapur, we try to go to that place and we try to beg forgiveness for any offences that we've committed to any devotees. So I'll take this opportunity now to beg forgiveness. Please forgive me if there's any offences that I've committed to any of you, knowingly or unknowingly. Please forgive me. I just want to say it before I get there, before I go. Maybe in case I don't get there again, maybe I won't get an opportunity to get there. So there's also another place in Vrindavan at Govardhan Hill, which is called Surabhikund, and at that place it is said the same thing takes place, that if you go there and you beg forgiveness for any of your Vaishnava aparad, then Krishna will forgive. He forgave Indra at that place. So sometimes we become proud, and when we become proud we tend to commit offences because we think I am above everyone. Prabhupada said, why do we call each other Prabhu? Because devotees are thinking, you are my master. But sometimes we think we are Prabhu, because everyone starts calling us Prabhu. And then we think, oh yes, I'm Prabhu. So then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as soon as you think you're advanced, you become fallen. As long as you think you are fallen, then you have a chance to become advanced. So this is the proper mood of the devotee. So, even if you understand all of the Srimad Bhagavatam, all 18,000 verses, if you don't understand the essence, you're not qualified to speak on the Bhagavatam. So what is our qualification to speak? Our qualification is that at least we've understood, at least theoretically, the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is, Lord Chaitanya has summarized the philosophy in three ways. He says the Vedas are divided into three categories. What are the three categories or three subjects of the Vedas?
Histories?
No, that's that's right, but that's a different division. There's another division that I'm thinking about. Yeah, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So Mahaprabhu says, to understand Sambandha, he says Krishna Sambandha. Right? If you understand Krishna as the absolute truth, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjati, you understand Krishna as the absolute truth, then you understand Sambandha Gyan. Krishna and Krishna's energies, like that. Abhideya. Mahaprabhu says, Bhakti, Abhideya. Abhideya means the process of how to reach God, of how the soul connects to God. This is called Bhakti Yoga. Yoga means connection. So how does the soul connect to God? Through bhakti. This is abhideya, or the process. Mahaprabhu says, bhakti abhideya. Krishna sambandha and prema prayojana. Prayojana, or the goal of life, is prema pumata mahan. The goal of life is prema. If you study Bhagavatam, but you do not understand this point, the prema is the goal, then you don't understand the Bhagavatam. If you don't understand bhakti as the means, or Krishna is the attractive, and if you don't understand that Krishna is the absolute truth, then you have not understood the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the essence of the Bhagavatam, and one must understand these things if one wants to be qualified to speak on the Bhagavatam, to represent the Bhagavatam. Now, in this first chapter, what is the first chapter called? Questions by the sages. How many questions do they ask? Six questions. Okay, what are the six questions? Has anyone covered it yet? What are the six questions? At least give me one. Probably. What are the various incarnations? Yeah. Who are the Leela avatars? Right, that's one of them. What are the other five?
Sarga and Sada.
No. That's the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam. That's mentioned in the next canto. Like that. But what are the six questions asked by the sages? The first question is, what is the essence of the Vedas? Essence means Sara. Sara. Veda, Sara. What is the essence of the Vedas? Please tell it. They'll ask this question in the next few verses. What is the essence of the Vedas? And then, second question is, what is the Shreyas? Shreyas means the ultimate good for all people. For everyone. What is the ultimate good? What is the best thing for everyone, all of humanity? So what is the essence of the Bhagavatam, of the Vedas? What is the ultimate good for all people? And then, the third question is, please tell us about the original form of God. Please tell us about Krishna. And then the fourth and fifth question are, please tell us about the Leela avatars, Krishna's various pastime incarnations, and please tell us about the Purusha avatars, or the incarnations who create this material world. And then the sixth question is, please tell us where Dharma and Jnana have taken shelter in the Kali Yuga. Now that Krishna has gone, where will we find Dharma, religion, and where will we find Jnana or spiritual knowledge in the Kali Yuga? Now these six questions are answered by the end of the third chapter. The first two questions, which are essential questions, they are answered in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, from verses around 11, 12 to verse 20. Then it is given the essence. What is the ultimate good for all people? Actually, no, it's more than that, because from verse 5 and 6 it is also answered. Five, so you can say from 5 to 20, like that. These questions are answered. Like that. What is the essence of the Vedas? What is the ultimate good for all people? Now, Srila Prabhupada says that this second chapter of the Bhagavatam, the first canto, is so important that devotees should memorize the entire chapter. There's so many important verses in that chapter. So many important verses. Practically, you need to memorize the entire chapter. Right. And from verses, I think it's 12 to 20, the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or the entire process of spiritual advancement, is discussed. Beginning from Shraddha to Prema. The nine levels of devotion are discussed. This is where Rupa Goswami has extracted these nine levels of devotion. Because our entire process of bhakti in our sampradaya is based upon the process of rising from Shraddha to Prema. From Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha to Bhajana Kriya to Anatta Nivritti to Nishta to Ruchi to Asakti to Bhava to Prema. These nine levels of bhakti. Now this is our process. This is our padati. It's called our process of how to get back to the spiritual world. This is coming from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. So the second chapter is so important. Then the verse about Krishna's tu bhagavan swayam, which is the 28th verse of the third chapter, and the lila incarnations, because the third chapter is about the incarnations and the Purusha incarnations. All this will be discussed in brief by the end of the third chapter. And then the final question is, where does Dharma, where does knowledge reside? And that answer will be given at the end of the third chapter by Shukadeva Goswami. Knowledge and religion, Sanatana Dharma and Divya Gyan, or spiritual knowledge, they reside in Kali Yuga within the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation of God. So all the benefit that you can get from Krishna's personal association, you can get by associating with the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are the six questions which you'll hear about in the next few weeks, and then we'll get the answers in the next few months, like that. And this is how the Bhagavatam begins, and then it goes into so many other conversations. So here in these opening verses, it discusses what is the qualification to give Bhagavatam class. So this may be the last class that I ever give, because I've just read this and I'm not qualified. So thank you very much for hearing from me and tolerating me. Maybe I'll come back again and give another class. But the whole point is, when you read these verses, then you realize we're not qualified. And this is the beginning of spiritual life. This is the beginning of having any actual qualification to speak the Bhagavatam. Means you have to be humble. If you don't have humility, then you have no qualification. If you think you're qualified to represent this scripture, to speak on this scripture, then you're not qualified. Right. If we think that we have no qualification, then okay, then you may have some qualification to even begin to speak on the Bhagavatam. So we'll stop here and see if there's any questions or comments on what we've discussed.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for a most wonderful time. Okay. And I beg you, even though I think you're very qualified, including this bit about humility that you throw down as well, speaks loudly because of occasion.
I just say those things because then it makes me look like I'm qualified. So.
I've got 2 points. One is, isn't it said somewhere that the knower of the Bhagavatam is also the knower of the Vedas? If you know the essence of the Bhagavatam, you automatically know that all the Vedas.
Yeah, because the Bhagavatam, as described in this purport, The Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedas. It was the final compilation of Srila Vyasadeva. So it is the essence of the Vedas. It is the Vedasara. Like that. So the conclusion, what is the ultimate good for all people? And what is the essence of the Vedas? That is the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the answer. The essence of the Vedas and the ultimate good for all people is discussed in the pages of the Bhagavatam.
And the other point is, you mentioned last time you were here, you mentioned about speaking about not having milk because it's all polluted, it's not quite right, and so perhaps everyone should stop having milk. I thought about this since then, and I thought, that's on one hand. On the other hand, I think it shouldn't be more that we concentrate on having the cows and making their own milk and making their own milk products, so that way it is right. So that way we don't do away with the cows, we don't do away with the milk, but more effort put into producing our own milk rather than stopping having milk.
Yeah, I never said stop having milk.
No, but I'm saying people thought about it because of the situation, the milk situation.
Yeah, so that's the point I was making.
So is this correct? We should be putting more effort into having our own milk and cows and making sure we can.
That's our philosophy. Prabhupada brought New Vrindavan in 1967. Right? 1967, how many years ago is that? 44 years ago. And how many cows are being milked in ISKCON even? Prabhupada started this project 44 years ago. Right? And it's only after 44 years, and now we're all starting to go, oh, wait a minute, we're supposed to be milking cows. Oh, yeah, Prabhupada brought farms. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's supposed to be growing vegetables on the farms. Oh, it's supposed to be milking cows on the farms. Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, because we're at Kali Yuga. It says in verse 11, that Kali Yuga people are a little bit slow. So this is, gradually it's happening. Like that. So, any other question or comment? Surya first.
Just wondering, the last line of the translation, you know, says all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. So what's the knowledge being referred to?
Physical and metaphysical. In the Sanskrit. Ayurveda. Physical knowledge means like Ayurveda. You know, in the Vedas, there's Ayurveda. So that's physical knowledge. It's to deal with this physical world. Dhanurveda is the part of the Vedas which discusses warfare. So you must study that. You must understand that. Manusamhita. A lot of Manusamhita is to deal with this physical world. So the parts of the Vedas which you have to understand, and then you can understand the physical knowledge. Because Krishna, the Vedas are said to be a instruction manual for how to live in the material world. So we study those parts of the Vedas so we understand how to live in the material world. That's why we're given the Ayurveda. Why is the Ayurveda there? Ayur means life. Veda, how to live. So Ayurveda says, okay, eat like this, sleep like this, evacuate like this, take bath like this. It gives all these instructions. If you follow that, you will live a long life, a healthy life. If you don't follow Ayurveda, then you won't live a long life. You'll get so many diseases. Ayurveda says there are three causes of disease. One is mental anxiety. So when devotees have too much mental anxiety, they become sick, right? One is uncleanliness. Devotees are not clean. They become sick. And one is indigestion. Devotees they eat too much, or they don't allow the food in their stomach to digest. Ayurveda says, if you have a light meal, you should wait 3.5 hours before you put anything else in the stomach, because it needs to digest. If you have a heavy meal, you should wait 6 hours. And you see devotees like 2 hours after they eat, then they're starting to like, you know, like that. And then they wonder, oh, I'm feeling sick. Yeah, you know, I have to go and see Dr. Dan. I have to go and see Dr. Dan and spend, you know, $10,000, you know, so I can work out that, you know, I should wait 3.5 hours before. You know, just follow the Ayurveda. It's not even that difficult. Yeah, devotees don't even understand. Just like Ayurveda says, you should drink water, right, in the morning. Like you see, before I give class, I start drinking water, right. So you should drink water 1 hour before you eat. Right, you have a glass of water. Right? So, you know, and then I'll take another glass now. I probably won't eat for nearly an hour. So you take water, right? And then you don't take any liquid for at least 2 hours after you eat, because you need time to digest, because the gastric juices are digesting. right? And then you pour water on it, dilutes the whole thing, and then, you know, you can't digest, right? You never, especially in this time of year, you know, I always drink warm water. This time of year, you drink cold water, it's just going to create kapha or mucus within your body. You eat too much rice or you eat cold food at this time of year, you just get kapha. And devotees walk around, oh, I'm feeling sick, you know, I have to go and see Dr. Dan. You know, it's not that difficult to work out. These are just basic points that are in the Ayurveda. So the sages, they study all of this. That's why they're called Vipra. A Brahmin is called Vipra. And Vipra means he has learned all the different items of knowledge. The other one is Jyotish. Jyotish means astrology. So you see Praladananda Swami, Banu Swami. Banu Swami is qualified to sit on the Vyasasana. You know, he's qualified to sit. Like, he knows the Vedas. Yeah, he knows the essence of the Vedas. He knows the Vedas. You can ask him anything about anything. Seriously, yes. I've never heard Maharaj say, I don't know. Right, you ask Maharaj, or you ask Praladananda Swami or something. Right, you know, and they... Yoga. Like, Praladananda Swami is a yoga teacher. That's part of the Vedas. Yoga, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. So you have to know, understand all these things. And then the metaphysical part means the Upanishads, means the philosophical part of the Vedas, and the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the prime. So to understand spiritual and material, you can't just understand one. You have to understand both, like that. So any other question or comment?
Prabhu, you know that Supreme Goswami is like the parent of Radharani. So, this is Sutta Goswami, whose disciple is he?
Say it again.
Sutta Goswami.
Yeah, what did you say about Sukadeva Goswami?
That he is his parent in the spiritual world. So, who is Sutta Goswami? What is his background? Who is his spiritual master?
Sutta Goswami was the son of Ramaharsha and Sutta. This is described later in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto. So he was the son of Ramaharsha and Sutta. Ramaharsha and Sutta was a very learned disciple, I think, of Srila Vyasadeva. And he was, when the sages of Naumashiranya came together, when Kali Yuga began, Ramaharsha and Sutta was asked to become the Bhagavatam speaker. And then Lord Balaram entered the assembly, right, because Lord Balaram was traveling at that time. And he entered the assembly, and Ramaharsha and Sutta, everyone offered their obeisances to Lord Balaram, but Ramaharsha and Sutta thought, well, I'm giving the class, I'm on the Vyasasana, I don't need to offer my obeisances to Balaram. And Balaram looked at him, Balaram thought, this person is proud, he's not qualified to speak on the Bhagavatam. So he took a piece of grass, I think it was kush grass, and he touched his neck, and then his head fell off. So all the sages were a little amazed, because the class was about to begin, the Bhagavatam was about to begin, and Lord Balaram just killed the speaker. So they said to Lord Balaram, can you please adjust the situation? You need to do something like that. So Balaram said, the son represents the father. So Sutta Goswami, who is Ramaharsha and Sutta's son, he said, you sit on the Vyasasana. He said, you are qualified. Whereas Sutta Goswami, when the original conversation took place between Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, when there were many sages, you see on the inside cover of the Bhagavatam, there are many sages there. Then Shukadeva Goswami said to Sutta Goswami, he said, come and sit very close. Because he said, you'll have to repeat this again in the future. So he was there and he heard it directly from Shukadeva Goswami. And then 230 years later, he spoke to the sages of Naumashiranya, like that. And it took him 230 years to assimilate it and realize the Bhagavatam. And then he spoke the Bhagavatam again.
That applies to my second question, which is, the sages, like we hear from Bhagavatam, that some of the sages live for so many yuga cycles. So how is it possible for the Markandeya lived for so many yuga cycles, and there are many other sages? How do they get this long life and to stay and maintain on Krishna?
They follow the Ayurveda. They eat properly. They take bath properly. They do all these things properly. and they're very powerful, they're very potent. Just like if you go to Kumbh Mela, every 12 years you have Kumbh Mela in India. I saw a photograph of one sadhu there, and they say that he's 400 years old. And he comes from the Himalayas. They all live in the Himalayas, even to this day, they're living in the Himalayas. And they go down into the... Prabhupada explained when Prabhupada went there in 77, maybe, Prabhupada went there. Then Srila Prabhupada said that they, even to this day, the sages, the yogis, they're in the Himalayas, they take their bath, they go underwater, and then by their mystic power, they travel all the way down to Allahabad, to where the Kumbh Mela is, and then they come up, and they take part in the Kumbh Mela, and then at the end, they go back underwater, and then they travel back up, and then they come back up like that. So there's one sadhu who is there, is very famous. He was there in the last Kumbh Mela, or the one before, and it said he was 400 years old, and he was speaking spiritual knowledge to everyone. So just because of their prana, or their spiritual potency, because their tapasya and their potency, they're so potent, they can live for a very, very long time. In Kali Yuga, life degenerates. But in Dwapara Yuga, people live for 1,000 years. And then in Treta Yuga, 10,000 years. And in Satya Yuga, people live for 100,000 years. Yeah, I mean, if someone's very powerful and very potent, then they can continue to live. It says in the Bhagavatam that Bhishma chose the time of his death. Because they're very powerful devotees or yogis. They can choose when they will die. They have much more power than what we have. Like that, so.
I just wanted to comment that Martin Day is an exception, and as he's mentioned also in the Bhagavatam, he's mentioned an exceptional devotee, and for those who do exceptional things, an exceptional devotee. So he's given us
benediction. Any other question or comment?
You said that a person should have heavenly degree, you know. So, as you see that when we progress in Krishna consciousness, because we see from our past and we weren't all chanting all the regulations and then we follow and we chant regularly. So, the pride something is very subtle, that okay, yes, I'm doing this, that happiness is there. But sometimes that on a very subtle level comes in with pride. It's so difficult to understand what is the subtle. So how do we, the happiness is there in the heart. How do we satisfy that and keep that in a humble state? Because it's very difficult to think that, okay, we are fallen. Because we were fallen previously. And then when we start chanting, we see ourselves quite peaceful, calm, and our Krishna arranges everything.
Yeah, it's not hard for us to become proud, because most of the time that's what we are. One time Giriraj Maharaj was walking on the beach with Prabhupada, and Giriraj Maharaj said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, sometimes I'm in Maya. And Prabhupada stopped and he put his cane on the ground and he said, you are always in Maya. He kept walking. So, you know, I know for myself, pride doesn't really leave me. You know, it doesn't like fluctuate too much. You know, even when I'm the most humble, I'm pretty proud. So if you're sincere and you're trying to overcome our material defects, then Krishna will help us. So Krishna makes arrangements in our life to make us actually humble. He'll take away your material abilities, he'll take away your spiritual abilities, he'll take away all sorts of things to make you rely on him. And say that you don't have any potency and it all comes from Krishna. So if you're sincere as a devotee, Krishna will do this to you over time.
Prabhupada, I just heard in Guru Maharaj said that one devotee has said, do we have to go through all this to become humble? But then he said that if you're already humble, you don't have to go through. So the question is, how do we become, what does it mean that you need to stay on the full high state?
Yeah, so it means Krishna will help you like that. It means if a devotee is already humble, it means they went through all that in his previous lifetime. You see, some devotees are already advanced. They join and they're already advanced. Practically the day they walk into the ashram, they're already advanced in Krishna consciousness. They have all the good qualities. They're humble, they're devoted, they're surrendered, they're peaceful. They have all the good qualities. That's because they did all the work in the previous lifetime. So then if we're doing it in this lifetime, then Krishna will help us. Krishna will diminish our pride, and he'll do it again and again and again, right, until we become actually humble. Just like sometimes you're giving class, right, and you're giving class, and then you think in your mind, you start thinking, oh, this is a really good class. Well, I'm giving a really good class. Everyone's really in this class. Well, I'm a really good class giver. And then a moment later, then everything that's in your head just goes, right? Everything you're talking about just suddenly disappears. And you cannot recollect what you're even talking about. It's happened to me sometimes. Sometimes I'm giving class and everyone's really into it and I'm thinking, oh, this is really good. And then suddenly it just all disappears. Krishna says, who do you think you are? Right? And just takes it all out of your mind. And then you're sitting there and you're looking at everyone and you're going, right, and then you start talking about something that's got nothing to do with the class because you can't remember what you're even talking about. So sometimes it will happen. So Krishna will, if we're sincere, Krishna will help us become humble. Is it okay?
What is that?
It's called Devananda Gaudiya Math. Gaudiya Math. Yeah, it's a Gaudiya Math. And there's the place where Mahaprabhu forgave Devananda Pandit. So we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sri Kodashi Brat ki. Julan Yatra ki. So everyone please come tonight. At 7 o'clock we will swing Radha Govinda for their pleasure in the Julan Yatra.